Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
So you join us again for another Need to Know episode. My name is Robert Crane, and sitting on the other side of the microphone there is my co-host, Brenton Johnson. Welcome, Brenton.
Good to be back, Robert.
Excellent. So what have we been doing last week that we probably want to let the ladies and gentlemen and boys and girls know all about now that we've settled back in and managed to dilute ourselves from the Kool-Aid?
Being up at the Microsoft Ignite conference. I finally got to the end of the conference and I've stopped calling it Inspire and started calling it Ignite. So it only took probably 3 days for me to stop doing that, but I'm well over it now. How did you find the event, Robert?
So just a bit of a background. Obviously, the main IT Pro event for Microsoft is called Ignite. It's normally in September in the US in Orlando. Obviously, not everybody from all around the world can make it to that location. So then they do a bit of a world tour called Ignite the Tour, and they move around different cities. And last week, it was Sydney's turn for two full days. So basically what we have is an exhibitor hall. We have a number of breakout sessions. We also have some smaller theater sessions, some hands-on labs. So there's a range of things to keep people amused there when it comes to Microsoft technology. So the full range, developer, IT Pro, and so on. We basically have a mix of end users and also resellers, IT professionals attending conference, and they can select from a number of tracks a number of sessions to go and view. So a lot of sessions around obviously the cloud enablement, not so much on the on-prem these days. Saw a couple of sessions on Server 2019, but the majority of it was on obviously cloud technologies, Office 365, especially Azure. AI is very big. I think overall that it was surprising to see the amount of people that had registered and attended. So the rumors were that there were 8,000, or they capped the attendance at 8,000. So 8,000 people that applied to enter the conference, and it was certainly very, very busy on the second day. First day, it dropped off a little on the second day. Certainly a lot of people moving about between the different locations. So again, probably, again, one of the big things is very different from last year's Ignite, which was in one location and had a partner-focused 2 days and then an open two more days. So very different events. So what's your take or your comparison from last year to this year, Brenton?
I don't think I went to Ignite last year. I went to the Microsoft Summit, which was that, is that what you're talking about there?
Where the Summit, they call it a different name. It's the same sort of thing, but.
Okay. Well, yeah, I went to the Partner Summit last year and then the Technical Summit afterwards. Found the Business Summit was a partner summit, so everyone there was partners. You find a lot of interaction with enterprise-focused people, so it's having conversations about, how do I solve this problem for 5,000 users, and, you know, I've made this mistake and it affects 10,000 users, and what do I do about it? And they were coming to really come and speak to the Microsoft gurus and try and get a bit of direction on what to do, which was good, and to network and just learn some things. And then there was a few of us from the small business area as well. But what you really find is it's more customers at this event, which was interesting. I might have got a new customer out of it. Who knows? I've had some really good conversations. People really liked what I was talking about. And they said, well, email me, get in touch. Let's have a conversation and see if we can work together. So, you know, it might have paid for itself. Might have picked up a couple of new customers. So, you know, maybe it's worth going. But Yeah, I liked it. Microsoft run an extremely professional show. They did have a lot of people there from Microsoft that you could go talk to. They had all the MVPs, so, and they were very accessible too. So I had a good chat to Mark Keane, who I'd never met before, only on The Voice. Mark O'Shea, I had a good chat to Robert, obviously. Come and give him a hard time. Troy Hunt was there. I had a chat to him. A few others that I quite like to follow and listen to. So, yeah, overall, good conference, worth going to. I'd encourage anyone who's thinking about it to go, okay, well, maybe I'll just go out, and even if you're not really sure what you'll get out of it, go to some of the sessions and just learn about what the cutting edge is, because that's really what they're selling. Would you agree with that, Robert?
Yeah, I think, like you said, the focus is very much on enterprise. It's on the E5. It's on the full suite of products. So the expectation is, you know what Azure AD Premium P2 is with all the features. They're not particularly focused on the more limited SKUs. They're trying to sell you the whole range of products. So, again, like you said, they're focused on the enterprise solutions. I mean, that still does translate down to the SMB, but some people may not be aware of some of the technologies that they were talking about. So a bit of an eye opener there. I think also too, the big positive is obviously the networking. That's where I spend most of my time, in and around the Microsoft stand, talking to distis, talking to people, attendees, rather than going to sessions, because I find the sessions typically you can pick up or learn the documentation, whatever, certainly go and get the slides after the fact. But I generally prefer to look at them on YouTube or whatever and slow them down and try it for myself while that's working through. So most of my time was spent networking in the hall there, which was really good. Like I said, you got to meet a lot of people. You also got to network with other folks that you might not catch up with as regularly, get some direct questions asked. And part of my role there was to also man a stand for a couple of hours both days and answer questions that people had, and some of them were very specific, and some of them I couldn't answer because they were so specific. But again, did my best and hopefully sent them on to the right people to go and talk to get the information that they're after. So again, a lot of topics, a lot of information was covered. Again, we'll put the link in the show notes. You can go and have a look and maybe download the slides and the files. I did a presentation myself, and I have put that up on my blog today. So we'll put that link in there as well if you want to grab it from there as well. Now, one of the experiments that we did with starting off with the patron group was we set up the new Microsoft app called Kazala. So there's a bit of a WhatsApp replacement, I suppose, or mirror. And the idea was is that people who are attending the conference can chat about where they're going, what session they're sitting in, where they're sitting, where they can meet up with others, where dinner is, all that sort of stuff. So I know that, Brenton, you're involved a little bit in it. What's your thoughts on the success or the implementation of Kazala?
Yeah, look, I think it fills a hole. You know, Kazala is very much a product for, you know, the third world, for lack of a better term. So, you know, big markets like the Philippines and India and stuff, where they have low-powered devices, cheap devices, and they need a very lightweight application to communicate with. That happens to work really well in this thing. It's a WhatsApp clone, for lack of a better word, but unlike WhatsApp, it doesn't have the end-to-end encryption like they do. It's very much focused around getting control of that company conversation. So you can put some management over it. I think Robert was talking about you can put swear word filters over it, and you can put a little bit more management over the top of it, where you just have none of that with WhatsApp because it's not really designed for business. It's a personal chat tool. There is a WhatsApp business, but it's a whole another conversation for a different day and not what we're talking about today.
Well, the good thing is that we'll have Praveen Malu, who's the Senior Product Marketing Manager for Kazala. I did an interview with him, so we'll tack that on to the end of our a little update here so you can get a better idea from Microsoft exactly what the thinking is, what the app does. But it is a free app. You can obviously just connect up, create groups, do a chat directly, but it's also now an enterprise version, which you will find available in all SKUs of Office 365. So the added component, the premium offering in Office 365 gives you more management, gives you more control, allows you to add and remove users, do all that sort of back-end stuff there, and connect it up to Office 365 Identities. Now, the thinking that I had when I set it up for this conference was for a number of reasons. So firstly, a bit of experiment to see how people used it. I think that where I saw great success, or where I think it worked really well, was is what you would find is that, say, in the morning when everybody's rolling into the event, and there's all these questions, what's happening, where is everybody? You would get potentially hundreds and hundreds of messages and answers and replies and funny jokes and pictures and all that sort of stuff. Which is great, which gets the conversation flowing, it gets the interaction happening, but you probably don't want that sort of conversation in Teams. You probably don't want that sort of conversation in our patron Facebook group, because not everybody's at the conference. So I think for a very targeted community or very targeted group of people around this conference, it worked really, really well, because it kept some of that day-to-day conversation away and out of those other groups where it really hasn't got much value once the conference is finished. So I looked at it as a way to move those sort of day-to-day conversations around the conference between people attending out of our normal collaboration area into a separate area. They could happily talk about anything, take pictures, interact, share jokes, do all that sort of general water cooler talk. And then, again, not overload other people who aren't at the conference and aren't so much interested. So I think in that respect, it worked really well. I also like the fact that it was easy to share photos, locations, all that sort of stuff, kept people in touch. And I think that probably on the negative side, unless you're, again, you like those sort of constant messages, if you weren't looking at the app on a regular basis and came back, there could be hundreds of messages to scroll through, which probably didn't have a lot of value when people are saying, where are you sitting, where are you doing this? But overall, I think it was a very positive thing. And again, my thinking behind it, the reason that I implemented it, was basically to keep those sort of trivial conference-style conversations out of our other collaboration areas to, again, avoid other people who not necessarily at the conference and not necessarily interested. So in that respect, I think it's done its job and it worked really well. So what's your sort of thoughts on that, Brenton?
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, Robert. It's a great job for just getting a group of people organized and walking in the same direction. So you can imagine this in a crisis situation. There's a fire or there's a flood or maybe there's a business continuity issue and everybody in the organization has to be engaged in some level. But you really need that real-time SMS level of interaction, but it's got to be simple. And that's where Kazala really comes through. You don't have to onboard people to Teams and do adoptions training. They download the app, they scan the QR code, and if they've ever used SMS before, they're in there collaborating. It's very, very intuitive. As I said, it's a very, very good clone of WhatsApp for a lot of the features. Its feature comparison is pretty close, actually. There's not much that WhatsApp does that Kazala doesn't do out of the box.
It can do phone calls, it can do pictures, it can. But the big thing, like I said, is the integration with Office 365 we expect to grow. Very interesting to see how it will integrate with Teams and other things like that, how it fits in. And again, I encourage you to listen to the interview after this introduction on Microsoft Thoughts, where it's going. It's still the fairly early days for this product, I think, but I think it does fill a niche. And I, like you said, I think that Teams is persistent chat, but it's probably not immediate persistent chat. So you could wait half a day. It's a bit like email, I suppose. But I think Kazala is really about immediacy. It's like, where you are, what are you doing? I'm over here, wave your hand, see this, I'm at the coffee machine. What do you want to do for lunch? All of that sort of stuff. And I also like the fact that it can remove that sort of trivial conversation from other collaboration options like a Facebook community or something like Teams. Yes, you could have it all in there, but I think, again, a lot of people get very frustrated with a constant stream of trivial information that's probably not relevant to them if they're not at the conference. So I think it worked well. We'll keep using it. We'll use it in a number of other circumstances. We've got a Kazala group as part of the patron organization I've set up. So again, that is another benefit. Get to use it, understand it, see how it works. What else grabbed your attention at the conference, Brenton?
Well, I missed out on Troy Hunt's serverless session. There was a line out the door of people who wanted to get in, and I I got distracted and talked to Robert for too long, and I didn't end up getting in there in time. So I'll have to watch that one on the YouTube. But it was quite amazing how popular that one was. And after listening to his podcast, he said that the numbers that come through were like 4.9 out of 5. People were very happy with the session, et cetera, et cetera. What else? I had a look at the new secure score. That was really cool. And this is another one that I think fits really well for a small business, because even though there's a lot of stuff in there that you might not do as a small business, a lot of the really key stuff is in there. And it doesn't just say blah, 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 complicated. It actually now includes more description and how it all works and why you do it and how you do it. And now they're actually mapping it to all the industry standards. So NIST, CIS, you know, pick a standard, ISO, they're mapping all of those secure score controls into that. And they said they're pretty much nearly done doing that. So, you know, this is just another one of those things that Microsoft gives away for free. People have to know it's there and turn it on and use it, obviously. But as a small business, as me trying to explain the value to a 20-seat customer, that's a really good one because I can sit there confidently and explain it. So they went through all of that. So that was really cool. What other things I see? Have you got any other good highlights there,
Robert? Yeah, I got some feedback from Tony, who's a listener, regular listener. Thank you very much, Tony. Obviously, he sent through some feedback, giving us the thumbs up for obviously the podcast. So thank you very much for that. But he was at the conference and also noted that the ratio of males to females, in his opinion, was about 1 to 5. And then if he did, he was doing the security and compliance sessions, and he reckoned it was 20 to 1. So one of the big items was the diversity and inclusion thing that Microsoft and the focus they now have on that. But again, unfortunately, as you look at it, basically it was typically a sea of men, which is, again, it is changing, but still very, very slow. And it's a case of, you know, how do you get that to change and get that closer to par? Very interesting to see. It's obviously becoming a bigger and bigger thing inside all sort of tech to get that diversity, get that balance, that gender balance and whatnot, inclusion and all that sort of stuff. So it's something very hard to do. And it's interesting how tech, to a large extent, has become the domain of a very, a unique demographic in some ways. And now it's reached that point where it needs to change. So outside the technical, the other sessions and that sort of thing, that I thought was a very big theme running through it. There are a number of sessions on that. There was a couple of stands on that as well. So again, lots and lots of focus now placed on trying to get this diversity and get this balance, which I think will make the industry better overall.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more there. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more there, Robert. One of my big bugbears is the lack of women in IT. Back in the early days of computers, where you literally had to be a super genius to figure out any of this stuff, it was 50-50 male-female. Because they needed literally the smartest people in the country and put them all in a room together. And as computers become easier and easier to use over time, then the industry become a lot more accessible. But what happened is computer games come along. All the computer games were largely geared and marketed to men. The computer was put in the boys' room, and over a period of time, we've got female representation down to very, very low levels. But you could see the attitude of Microsoft and the attitude of vendors of trying to go, well, how do we make this industry more inclusive? How do we get the best and brightest? We don't want to lose the brightest women to other industries. We want them working in IT because this is what's changing the world. This is the greatest industry on earth, IMO. And so, yeah, it was just really interesting to see how much emphasis is being put on that, but not in a let's give people a handout. Let's actually take advantage of the best and brightest talent we have out there.
So, yeah, again, I think it was overall there were some logistics challenges. I think that maybe had to do with the where the venue was, how that worked out. But I think overall that most people would take away a positive. I think for me, like I said, my trick is generally to focus on the networking, put myself in a central location and make myself available for conversations with, like I said, partners, with resellers, with customers and with distributors. And again, look to assist them and help them better understand the technologies out there, because it can be very confusing. Try and bring my own experience to it as well. So we had a patron dinner as well. We got together with members of the patron community, had a bit of a dinner on the night. So we, again, spent some time before and after the event catching up. A lot of people flying in from interstate. So I thank them for taking part in that and obviously being part of the patron community while at this event. And we'll do it again, obviously, when we get another chance, and definitely again next year when the Microsoft Roadshow rolls into town. Now, again, like I said, we've got our interview with the product manager of Kazala coming up, but a few short things to catch up on. So again, we'll put the link in the show notes for you, but Azure AD has released another blog post, the step four, which is conditional access policies, and they're going to show you the top 10 actions to secure your environment using things like conditional access policies. So this is an ongoing series. I think it's 10-part series that Azure AD are putting out. So we're up to step number four. Some good information there on how to start protecting your environment using things like conditional access, which I think is pretty much a must-have these days. Also, now we've got the Microsoft Authenticator app's going to send you notifications. So if you've got multi-factor turned on and someone else is trying to get into your account and, you know, it's going to pop up and ask them for a code, which will protect you. But on your app, it will let you know that someone else is trying to do that. So again, you'll get a prompt knowing that someone else is potentially trying to log into your account and requesting a code. Now, because you've got the device, you that's not going to happen, but at least you get now notifications from that. What else have you got there, Brent? Anything else to bring people up to date with?
Sticking to the new 1901 that's coming out. They're just changing the way that updates are going to be installed and delivered, removing some settings, which seems like a pretty straightforward thing to do. They're still going to have that deferral of feature updates and quality updates if you want to still do that. I, for one, have been really just pushing the feature updates out probably 2 to 3 months. But we've discussed this on the podcast before. We're not really seeing the big problems that you used to have with Windows Service Pack updates, breaking things and stuff. If you're really living and breathing a modern desktop experience, as spruced heavily at Ignite, then, yeah, you shouldn't have any issues. So, so they're just changing that. There's a bit of an article there. You might want to go into more detail, but it's really not that exciting. Would you agree, Robert?
Well, I think, again, Microsoft's trying to get the balance when it comes to updates. Obviously, one of the largest components about vulnerabilities people face is not having up-to-date software. So there's a balance between obviously making sure people are as up-to-date as possible, because it affects everybody, because we're all connected together pretty much so on the internet these days. So again, we need to strike this balance, because people have a lot of diverse things on their machines. I think that's changing over time. We're getting more and more standard machines with Windows 10 and that. But again, it's a hard balance for Microsoft to strike when you've got to update Windows, Office and a range of applications. And yes, we'd all like it to be perfect for it to come through. But again, we also want to maintain security. So we've just got to make sure that they strike the right balance. I'm sure Microsoft is on the case there. And again, you know, it's going to make mistakes and hopefully adjust going down the line. And that's why I run the insider builds on a couple of machines, just to get a feel for it, to see what's happening, make sure it doesn't break anything major with Office 365. And then if it does, feed that back to Microsoft. So again, that's a big positive there. And there will be some frustrations and I think some bumps along the way, but it is improving, I think, overall, considering where we've come from previously, and we look forward to that continuing to improve. Now, I think you've also got something here about Microsoft begging you to stop using Internet Explorer. Do you want to explain to people what that's about?
Oh, yeah, that's classic people still using Internet Explorer. I actually posted this one up on the Patreon group to see if people were still using it. And to my surprise, not surprise, there's quite a few people still using it for different things. Nothing I would classify as mission critical stuff, but stuff that they need to do as part of their job. So it's frustrating. You know, this has been an abandoned piece of software for a long time now. Windows 10 brought Edge. Edge is a far superior experience. And Edge is now getting superseded by a Windows version of Chrome or a Microsoft version of Chrome. So, yeah, when we're talking about Internet Explorer, it's almost like talking about the old Netscape days or something, you know. It just feels that old to me. although, don't forget, there used to be, you know, 96% of the market or something, but times move on. Do you have any thoughts on this, Robert?
I think, unfortunately, Internet Explorer is still required. Some very old applications that haven't moved, maybe an accounting app or a dentistry app or something. A lot of the banks, I believe, have written things in ActiveX, which to an extent lock them in. They can obviously lock their environments down because they have a dedicated IT department. But again, it is on the way out, but it's still there. It still may be used for some very small percentage of applications. But yes, again, if you can phase those out. And it does make it a bit challenging when, you know, Microsoft did use Edge as the replacement and is now looking at, again, updating, changing that because they didn't get the adoption that it suspected. So, again, lots and lots of challenges there. But in the long run, if you're using Internet Explorer, now's a good time to get off it and to move to either Edge or to a other support third-party browser that you do make sure you keep up to date these days. So, again, the browser is the most common connection you would have to the internet. So again, make sure that that is always up to date, whichever one you choose. I use all of them because I need as many windows open as possible to get to different tenants in Office 365. So I make use of all of them, plus in private as well. Not so fussed about any of them really. I suppose the preference I would have is generally I try to use Edge with my own personal stuff because I've got the single sign-on set up with my machine. So I can go in and out of my tenant without having to use a login and a password because I've already logged into the machine. And then I would be using Chrome typically for some of the other stuff. But I need to, again, have a look at how things render in Internet Explorer or Firefox as well. The other thing we can probably let people know too, Brenton, if they haven't seen it as yet, is that if you go to your Office 365 tenant, you go to typically the first page, so the first page that shows you all the Office 365 icons, you will see in a very short period of time that those icons are being refreshed with the new versions, those new ones that we spoke about a while back that Microsoft has brought out. They will start appearing all over the place. I've noticed they've started to appear in the Twitter feeds for the products like SharePoint and so on. So watch out for those new desktop icons for Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, SharePoint coming to your environment in a very, very short period of time. Now, is there anything else that we need to get people up to speed with before we throw to our interview?
No, I just mentioned that we haven't forgot about certifications. We are going to talk about certifications in the future. That is on our roadmap. Look at me sounding like a Microsoft employee.
Where is that roadmap that people can look at? And then I'm sure you're the one that's maintaining the roadmap for them. So we shall blame you if it's not up to date, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we are still working on that. I had a really good chat to both Robert and Mark O'Shea about certifications and on the ground and really getting my head more around what it's like to take them. So we will come back to that topic. So if you're really
we need to spend, obviously, dedicate the time to do it because it is a deep topic and we want to make sure we cover it properly. And again, we want to make sure that this information with our interview gets out there in a timely manner. So again, we'll hold that off probably till the next episode. We can talk about that. So don't forget that. Please send us any suggestions if you want to hear more about certifications or Microsoft products or anything specifically, maybe Azure AD, some security best practices, or my favorite and yours, PowerShell. By all means, you can do that by contacting us at N2KPodcast on Twitter and Facebook, feedback@needtoknow.cloud. Again, you can find me on the Twitters at DirectorCIA and Brenton's at ContactBrenton. And we'll make sure all the notes and resources are put up in the show notes so you can view those and get some value from the information that we've mentioned here. And if we again haven't mentioned something, make sure that you do let us know. We'll make sure that we get it up there for you. As you can appreciate, lots and lots of info has been flowing from Ignite. We'll give you the link so you can go and have a look at the sessions, download the PowerPoints and have a look at what the content was. And again, we look forward to catching up with people when the other big events roll around into town. So with that, I think we're pretty much done, and it's about time, I think, to get into our interview. But what do you reckon, Brenton? It's about time to do that?
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. And we will now throw over to our interview with Praveen Malu, who is the Senior Product Marketing Manager for Kazala. So I have a special guest on this episode, Praveen Malu, who is the Senior Product Marketing Manager for Kazala, has joined us to talk about this mysterious product that is out there called Kazala. But why don't we let Praveen introduce himself and let all the listeners know who he is and what he does at Microsoft.
Awesome. Thanks, Robert. Hey, everyone. I'm Praveen Malu. I'm a product marketing manager with Microsoft Kazala. I've worked on Microsoft Teams and Skype for Business and other Office 365 products before. Great to be talking to Robert today about Microsoft Kazala and demystify for all of you.
Well, it's good that you've come from a background of using Teams, Skype, all these other collaborative tools that many people, many listeners are probably very familiar with when it comes to Microsoft 365. But probably the new kid on the block is this service called Kazala. So can you give us basically a very general overview of, you know, what is Kazala? And I suppose the other thing is where did the name actually come from?
Let me address the first question before. So Kazala really means, you know, what's happening in one of the Indian languages, in Marathi. So that was the inspiration. It's a product which was born in India with the India Development Center. So there was some inspiration there, and that's how the name came about. And in terms of why Kazala, that's a question that I get very frequently. You know, why another messaging app? Why not, you know, bring the capabilities that Kazala provides into one of the existing products? And that's a very fair question. And we've thought about it too at Microsoft, right? One of the key reasons is if you look at the landscape, the modern workplace landscape today, we talk about, you know, collaboration, communication within the organization. We talk about knowledge workers, information workers, being able to bring people, you know, as guests, as you can do in Teams, into your work environment. So you can collaborate, you know, very easily without friction, no matter, you know, whether they're in the directory, outside your directory. So all that's great. But, you know, the landscape today extends well beyond just your organization, right? Being able to collaborate with your first line workers, for example. So we're investing quite a lot in our first line capabilities as Microsoft, as you know, especially with Microsoft Teams, we're bringing in first line capabilities as well. But if you look at the landscape outside, there's a huge opportunity to digitize, to connect people outside your, you know, immediate organization, outside your first line boundaries, your suppliers, your contractors, your vendors, your customers as well, where you're not connected today in any means. You're probably using email. At best, you're using one of the, you know, consumer messaging apps to get work done. And people running businesses on consumer messaging apps. And what we've seen customers ask for is, hey, we need a secure way of being able to collaborate across the network, across the value chain, from, you know, from your back office to your first line workers and down to my customers. So that was one of the key reasons why we're investing in Kazala, which lets you connect this entire value chain. And you know, the simple pitch for Kazala is it's a secure work management and messaging app, and it's very simple to use.
I think you're right. I think the simplicity is a very important thing. I think that Teams, Skype for Business, they're fantastic tools. And again, they're generally the fat clients. They, again, have more complexity. So Teams has files, conversations, additional tabs and whatnot. For most people, you know, they can probably manage that. But I think that, like you said, there is this WhatsApp style, you know, iMessage environment that I see a lot of people using day to day in my travels. And to move that into a secure, managed and integrated into Microsoft 365 makes, you know, a lot of sense. I think that, again, people would probably struggle. It's like, okay, have you got some examples, some real world examples of where the product has been used successfully. Now, is there a really good use case that you can point to and sort of say, look, this was the perfect tool and it solved these sort of problems? Now, I've seen a couple of videos, I think, that you've put out, but is there sort of one that sticks in your mind that you can really help people say, look, you know, this is the tool that solved this problem?
Yeah, I think Kazala solves, you know, multiple problems across multiple segments. But let me start with this government to citizen scenario, right? I think that kind of speaks to the scale of the product. So we have government of Andhra Pradesh in India using Kazala to connect the entire state and use Kazala as this front end for delivering real-time citizen services, right? For example, if there's a new policy which is rolled out, or let's say your electricity line is broken and you want to raise a complaint with the respective department, you can do that. So Kazala provides you with all these unique communication models where, you know, if you're using one of the consumer messaging apps, for example, you can do one-on-one chat. You have these flat groups where everybody plays the same role. You can have 200 people. But when you want to scale to, you know, a million people, there's no real alternative. And that needs rethinking of how you look at, you know, how the group is structured and what you can do and how you communicate with that group. In this example, in a hub and spoke group where the hub is the government and all the citizens are essentially spokes, the hub can talk to the spokes. So I as a government can, you know, disseminate information and it reaches all my, you know, citizens, and citizens can send information back only to the government. So they can't talk to each other. So that's what we call a hub and spoke model. And that's great for, you know, as a B2C model as well, where, you know, customers can, or can, organizations can reach out to their customers in a very mobile, easy to use, friendly group communication chat where you can share out information about product updates, about news and offers and whatnot, right? So G2C, where government to citizens, you know, they're connecting. B2C, businesses connecting with their customers. B2B as well, businesses connecting with their businesses. Think of, you know, large scale supply chains where you have, you know, merchants and vendors, and we've seen with a lot of customers no real way to communicate, do invoicing or look at inventory and reordering inventory. All these business processes are very much paper-based where, you know, you go restock inventory, you take a photo, you send information. There's a lot of information flow, exchange of ideas. And when you're looking at a complex value chain and your supply chain is getting bigger and larger and complex at the same time, it's really hard to coordinate. So those are some examples. And of course, the final one, which is, you know, within your organization and with first-line workers as well, being able to manage work better and give structure to the data. For example, you might be conducting surveys within your organization. You might be sending trainings to your first-line workers. You might be sending jobs and tasks. Today, you're using a lot of these, you know, consumer messaging apps where it's very unstructured. There's no structure to the data. You send a question, somebody sends an answer back. It's all in the chat, but you can't really derive business insights from that, from the data that's coming back from your field. As simple as doing a survey, if you're asking a question, what we've done with Kazala is we have integrated all these work management features that you commonly use, like doing a survey or sending a training or making announcements. We automated these and made these small little apps, mini apps, very easy to use. Anyone who has basic knowledge as a business owner or a business, you know, function owner can come in and start using, you know, create a group. You have the basic communication capabilities like audio, video calling, sending video messages and audio messages and whatnot. But on top of it, you have this, you know, business value with these mini apps. And as a business owner, you can, you know, not only send this information out, gather the data back, but you can analyze and see who has completed the training, you know, what is the survey result. And all of this is automated again on the management portal with Office 365, where you can get rich insights, look at Power BI reports. So this power of bringing analytics, data, messaging, and these mini apps, which any business user can use, is really powerful across, you know, all four segments, you know, be it B2B, B2C, and G2C, or even within the organization.
So the example that I would give is where I find it is working really well is when we do conferences. So we have Ignite the Tour starting in Sydney very shortly, and we've put all the little community that I have on Kazala. So there's conversations happening around there. It's probably the best way to keep together as a group, to find out what's going, where people are, what sessions people are in, when they're going to have a break maybe, or going for dinner or something. So I find that it works in those sort of environments as well. Now, I think that one of the big challenges I see is that a lot of traditional IT people are used to a very structured approach to information. So they're used to basically files and folders, F drives. Again, they tend to struggle when it comes to this sort of freeform information that we see in things like Teams and conversations. And I think from what I can see, the Kazala is very similar in the fact that it seems to talk to perhaps a younger demographic, a demographic who's more about broadcasting. Would that be a fair statement? Do you find that it's normally adopted by the younger generations because they're familiar and they're used to these sort of applications?
I would say there's definitely a pattern there. Younger demographics, yes. And I think in general, people are getting used to communicating very differently. You know, there's definitely a different speed. There's definitely the mobile, point of view as well, where people want to access everything on their mobile devices. And Kazala, as you see, it's a mobile first and, you know, to a certain degree, mobile only app, right? You have to sign up using your phone number to be able to create an identity. And that is actually a very fundamental shift from how we look at identities as well, because in a lot of these markets, in emerging economies, you know, when you talk about email and password, the younger generation especially, they are used to phone number and one-time password as their identity. If you ask the younger generation, they may not even have email in some of the countries. That's definitely a factor. And when we look at some of these mobile-first markets, we've completely skipped the PC wave, right? Where you only have your mobile device as your primary device, you're getting work done. You may not even have a mobile device from your organization. You're just using your personal mobile device to get work done. It's definitely a very useful tool to have, which your organization can manage the data, but you still have the ease, the simplicity, the modern concepts, where you're using simple-to-use chat and you're using a phone number to sign up, no complicated enterprise technology, but you have all the enterprise-grade security. So there's this dual sort of benefit. There's the end-user simplicity, which I think is extremely critical for any new service in terms of driving adoption and making sure people can get onboard very easily without a lot of training. But at the same time, you want to make sure that, especially with regulated industries like financial services, or talking about healthcare, where we've seen customers use Kazala, you want to make sure the data is owned by the organization, it's protected. And since it's connected with Office 365, all your data resides in Azure data centers. So you have this, peace of mind that, hey, this is secure and compliant. And for my end users, this is really useful. And that is why I think we've seen business users actually take this product and they've started exploring, how can I use Kazala to simplify what I'm doing day to day? And you definitely need IT support to make sure that, you're not compromising your corporate data, but then you act as a partner to your business, essentially.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that there is a free Kazala plan, and there's also one that is an enterprise connected to Office Microsoft 365. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And the free app essentially is the app in the App Store. Anybody can go download the app. You can sign in. You don't need any Office 365 account. Now, if you want additional security and you want to make sure that people in your organization are using Kazala, but they are connecting their Office 365 account, they can essentially add or link their Office 365 identity to their Kazala account, which is your phone number-based identity. What that allows you to do is essentially any groups you create within the organization, you are now connected to the directory. All of your data, stays within the organization as well. And then you can search your internal directory. So your Azure Active Directory, you can start looking up people in Kazala. Since you've connected your Azure Active Directory or your Office 365 account to the Kazala account. And the free app essentially lets you do the basic, calling, messaging, and all of that. And the pro version, which is essentially what you get with Office 365, it's already included in a lot of the plans. It lets you manage users. It lets you publish new cards. So the work management apps that I was talking about a little while ago, surveys and polls, you can customize those, make your own, you can, you know, even create your own. So it has a very extensible API framework, so you can connect with a lot of your line of business systems, build your own little cards for very specific business purposes. What we've seen is people, you know, invest in a very specific use case, very specific business scenario, and build their own app. And then they, you know, 6 months down the line, they find it very expensive and they discard the app, or they don't maintain it because it's too costly to keep up to the app store changes. And Kazaa allows you to quickly build a little app of your own and embed it within the Kazaa interface. So with the pro capabilities, you get analytics and extensibility and security and manageability and a lot more, actually.
Okay, so the big benefit, obviously, is the management, is the compliance, is the usability. I've certainly found that myself by, again, setting it up in my Office 365 tenant and using it within my little patron community. Works really well. Again, you can easily restructure it. You can make subgroups. You can, again, use this really, really easy as a backend, as an administrator. Now, I think probably one of the other common questions I see out there is, okay, we've got this messaging product, this, as you know, all the benefits that are there, but we've also invested in things like Teams and Skype for Business, and there seems to be they don't seem to be integrated well. So if I'm using Teams, how can I start integrating that with Kazaa? It seems to be they're a bit separate at the moment. What's the sort of direction that you see this taking in regards to Kazaa working with the rest of the Office, or being surfaced in other areas within the Microsoft 365 environment?
Yeah, absolutely, good question. So we, as you see, we are integrating and bringing products together more and more wherever it makes sense. And technologies like Microsoft Flow, it really allows you to orchestrate a lot of these workflows and business processes, for example, and bring data from one, one system to the other. And we've seen great examples of customers where what they do is they create their training, they collaborate in Microsoft Teams, but they want to be able to publish the training at the end of the day to their franchisee, where you have a lot of restaurant workers there using Kazaa. They don't have an identity or Azure Active Directory because they're part-time workers, so they may be contractors. They may not even be there working for that restaurant after 2 months, so they're using Kazaa. But using Flow, you can actually publish a training from Microsoft Teams into the Kazaa group. So that really allows you to connect the two systems. So in some ways, you can actually enable that for any scenario using Microsoft Flow, because we support a lot of the same events across the two. Right. So that's one way of being able to integrate the two better together for your scenario. Kazaa also has a web app where we're bringing in more features. It'll be generally available right now. It's in preview, but you can add the Kazaa web app into your, as a Teams tab, which allows you to see your messages. For example, if you're a knowledge worker, you're spending most of your time on your desktop, you don't want to use another, interface on your mobile device, you can, sign up, but you can connect your Kazaa web app in your Teams environment as well. And we're always looking for more opportunities to interoperate and see where it makes sense for the products to come closer together. So if you have any feedback to the listeners of the podcast, definitely send us your feedback on the tech community.
We'll do that. I've just had a quick look here in Flow and the Kazaa connector. There are a number of templates here. There are quite a few actions that you can trigger Flows on. So I have to spend a little time playing with this, and the integration with Teams. Again, I haven't explored that. I will certainly do that as soon as this podcast is finished. But on a side note, I really like one of these templates here that I've noticed down the bottom in Flow. It says, when an attachment contains racy or adult content, send an email. So there you go. That's a good way to trigger your Flow then, if it's got racy or adult content. I like that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So where do you see the product going in the future? So obviously we're here today. We now have this messaging application, which does, again, fills a role. It's beginning to be integrated more with the standard services that Microsoft 365 operates. But what's the grand vision here? What's sort of the long-term direction do you see for Kazaa? Is it going to be more of the same, or do you see it, again, looking to add additional services. I mean, what's sort of the grand vision of the product in your experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think in terms of the vision, the scenarios are pretty clear in our mind. There's definitely a huge opportunity today when I look at, you know, some of the business processes across industries, be it manufacturing or healthcare or retail or energy, where the business processes are still either paper-based, they haven't been automated, they are still using maybe legacy old, you know, desktop applications, or a lot of the businesses still, you know, filling data sheets and capturing information. So our goal with the product is really to be able to make this a simple work management and messaging app where you can automate a lot of these, you know, day-to-day business processes that you're doing today. We already have a good selection of many apps built in. So I think about 30 apps or so are already in Kazala today by default, available for free for you to use. Our goal is to expand that footprint and see, you know, what are our customers using? What are their needs? What are their pain points? What are they not able to automate, which we can look at as a pattern and bring into Kazala? So that's where, you know, one of our focus areas is going to be. The second is going to be around, as you said, you know, more and more integration with Microsoft 365. Today, Kazala has its own management portal for you to view analytics and manage your users. You know, since it's part of Microsoft 365/Office 365, you want to integrate a lot of the management and analytics capabilities into the M365 admin portal. So you have, as an admin, just one place to go manage your users and do everything in terms of, you know, information protection and, you know, if you're doing e-discovery and legal hold. So a lot of our focus is going to be, you know, on expanding that footprint. And that's more on the product side. In terms of, you know, markets, we'll be expanding gradually to more markets, and you'll be hearing more from us in the coming months as well. So I think in terms of scenarios, they're pretty clear, but it's a matter of bringing, you know, looking at more patterns and bringing that into the product eventually.
So I think probably the one thing that my little community would like you to put on your radar is the at mention. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we can do an at mention at the moment in Kaizala. So that's sort of become the industry standard, I suppose. So if we can get at mentions to let people know to come and pick up a message, or they've been mentioned in a conversation, you know, that would be probably a real big plus. Is there a user voice for Kaizala out there?
Absolutely. So what we've done is we've created a community on our Microsoft Tech community where you can, you know, look at some of the blogs we've published and some use cases. It also has an IDS space, which is essentially the user voice. What we're trying to do is, you know, bring the user voice closer to the community. That's where our community is. That's where we have exchange of ideas and feedback and whatnot. So I definitely encourage you to look at the IDS space on Microsoft Tech community. If you look for Microsoft Kazala, there's a blog space as well as an ideas space, and you'll see a few ideas already there, which some of our MVPs have actually gone ahead and submitted. So, and to go back to your question about ad mentions, that's coming in the next few weeks, if not days. So definitely that's something I think now everybody's used to, you know, ad mentions. It's a natural way of interacting and communicating where you want to draw attention to somebody real quick and not really create noise for others. So that's top of mind for us, and it'll be in the product in the next few weeks for sure.
Well, I'll make sure I at mention everybody who said that they wanted it in the product inside my little community. That'll make them very, very happy that they can start reach out to lots and lots of other people. So that's good. So, okay, let's say that you've randomly come across this podcast and the conversation that we've had. You aren't aware of the Kaizala product. You now would like to go and explore it in a little more detail. You have Microsoft 365. What's the best way, or are there resources that people can go and examine to help them get started and get a better understanding of where this service can help them in their business?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first place I would ask people to go to is our Microsoft Tech community, which I was referring to earlier. We also have our website, which is, you know, microsoft.com/Kaizala, K-A-I-Z-A-L-A. So that's definitely a good resource to check out, where we have a lot of our case studies with customers and references where you can see how Kaizala is transforming industries, you know, across the board. So that's definitely a good resource to check out. And, you know, Otherwise, I think we'll be creating a lot more content on our tech community. So watch out for that space.
Excellent. All right. So there are a surprising amount of resources out there. I think that probably the biggest struggle that I had when I first came across the product, it wasn't a huge amount of documentation. There is far more now. It's far greater, you know, to get you up and started. Now, I think probably the biggest struggle that I had when I set it up first was understanding this concept of mobile only. So it's like, oh, where's the web app? How do I do this? So again, that is a process. I think you have to sort of appreciate that, yes, there is now a portal in Microsoft 365 and so on, but it's really a mobile first environment. It's really designed for mobile interactions. That's where you get the best experience. That's where you do all the interactions. That may not be for everybody, as you say, but once you sort of conquer that concept of just putting your phone number in and signing up, it is amazing how quickly it is to get up and running and then, like I said, do surveys, do locations. And again, I'll point to the fact that for conferences, I think it's a fantastic tool that really solves a lot of problems, keeps everybody on the same page. It does require, obviously, like any, I suppose, scrolling messaging app, a bit of can be a bit of a fire hose at a time when you get lots and lots of people there. But at the end of the day, again, I think it is a great solution that does fill a need, especially those frontline workers, as you mentioned. And it's going to be good to see how this grows into it. I think that the big thing, especially I suppose in the Western world, in the people who are more information workers, desktop is, okay, how does this integrate easily and quickly with what I'm doing mm-hmm. on the desktop rather than having me to grab my mobile? But again, I think the big pull is those frontline workers who just want a simple interface and they want to ask questions or get feedback or whatever. It really is a good option. I encourage people to go and sign up for it and put all the links in the show notes. I've also got a patron community you're welcome to join and join in with our conversation. So again, I think there are a lot of resources now and you can see the product growing and improving over time. So that's really good to see. So as we sort of moving towards, rounding up our conversation here, is there anything else that you'd like to let listeners know about the product or the direction or maybe some quick tips and tricks you can let people know of how to get the most out of this product or perhaps, again, how to sell it to the more traditional management, you know, belt suspenders type people who are used to, you know, file servers on-prem and those sort of things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of opportunity. As you said, this product has a broad scope, you know, from event management to, you know, for bringing people together really quickly. It could be, you know, airline crew where you do not know what your crew is going to look like. Until the morning off, right? Where you want to come together as a group very dynamically, very quickly, based on maybe location, if you're nearby, or, you know, scanning QR codes, for example. So I would really encourage you to think about your business processes today, which are, you know, either manual or using, you know, non-secure apps today to communicate. And you'll be surprised to see how prevalent they are, actually. And I've been surprised to, talk to customers and see, prevalent use of consumer apps to really conduct critical business, and especially in regular industries as well. So I encourage you to think of your first line scenarios, to look at, you know, event management, how you're doing that, how you're conducting trainings, how are you engaging with your suppliers and vendors at scale. And when you start thinking of these scenarios, I think you start to appreciate the product and the capabilities more and more. So I think as a business user or even as IT, as you partner with your businesses, it's really starting to think of, you know, enabling people on mobile and still protecting all of your data. That's really the key. And I think, as you said, Robert, the scenarios, you know, span across first line, across, you know, government citizen scenarios. Public sector is, again, a big area for us, a big area of focus where we've seen in not just, you know, citizen services, but also, you know, when you're looking at metro services, train services, how can I make life easier for consumers by publishing, you know, let's say my schedule in the app rather than having to build a separate app for myself. If you're managing an event, can I use this to communicate with all my event attendees for, you know, communication and schedule and, you know, sessions and agenda and whatnot. So really depends on your scenario, but I'm sure there's at least one use case in your organization which you can start using Kazala for even today.
Yeah, so I think, again, the thing that I tell people is that, again, traditional hands-on in front of a desktop most of the time or large screen people tend to struggle to understand where it fits in and how to use it. I think that, again, it would, the way I would say to you is, look, you know, sit down and try and find a reason to use it rather than a reason not to use it. That's what I find. People tend to be very hesitant, conservative. It's like, okay, it doesn't cost you anything. It's built into the Microsoft 365 product. You can play around with it. You can try it. Again, it doesn't have to be the be-all and end-all. It doesn't have to replace Teams. It doesn't have to replace Skype. It can be used in conjunction with all these to fill in requirements, to serve specific needs. And again, my advice to people is go and explore the app, see what it can do. As you mentioned, it's constantly improving, constantly adding features. I found it, again, in my small environment to work very well. You do generally have to encourage people into it, but once you've got them there, again, they tend to be very social and they do tend to share, and it works really, really well. But again, I still see a lot of resistance out there. It's like, well, I've got this is more than enough. Why should I do this? So my advice to people is to, again, find a reason why you should use it. And the best way to discover that is to go and use it yourself. Try it. Again, you've got a free version. You can use it for communities or sporting teams or whatever. So there'll be no cost for them to start using it. And then if you want, and you do have a subscription, you can upgrade and start using what's available in the enterprise or the pro version. All right. So again, as we round off, if people have some questions for you, or they want to get in touch with you, or they want to clarify something that you've mentioned on the podcast, what's the best way for them to keep up with what's going on and get in touch with you?
Yeah. So tech community is the best, you know, space to ask questions. And I'm there pretty active, answering questions, engaging with the community. So love to see you there if you haven't signed up. Otherwise, you can also follow me on Twitter, which is, you know, Praveen underscore Malu. So if you're on Twitter, you know, I always, you know, interact with the community and answer questions. So those are two ways. And, you know, definitely looking forward to hearing more from the community. So, you know, leave us in, you know, question or comment on the community, or drop me a note on Twitter.
Cool. Is there a dedicated Kazala Twitter handle as yet?
Not yet. No, but that may be in the works.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that. I'll make sure that I put all the articles mentioned here and the links in the show notes so that people can go and refer to them. Again, I would certainly encourage you to go and sign up and get Kazala on your device, have a play with it, link it to your Office 365, and look at some of the solutions that it potentially can provide. Simple, easy, and again, it's adding a lot of features which, again, make life much easier, as you said, rather than creating a whole app just using that. And now that it's part of the Microsoft 365 family, I think that makes it a big benefit, especially for businesses to use with the knowledge that of the security and the compliance that is also built into it. So I would like to take this opportunity to thank Praveen for his time today. Appreciate all the information that you've shared. Again, we'll make sure those notes and links are available. Encourage people to go to the Microsoft tech community and start answering questions. And I think we look forward to seeing where this product's going to go and the integration that is certainly coming with Microsoft 365. So again, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Robert. Pleasure.
Excellent. All right. Well, I thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.